that music again. I recognize that. It must be time.
You know, that's an earworm that stays with me for days.
Oh, I just love it. But
it's fun.
Nobody else has talked about it, so maybe everybody else.
I love it. Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah, I know. How could you not? Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, here we are. Hello, and welcome to The Klatch.
Howdy, howdy.
You're listening to KVSH 101.9 in Vashon Island, Washington.
Yay.
I'm your host, Linda Nygaard. My cohorts in crime are Susan McCabe.
Hello.
And Heidi Skrypek.
Hi.
They're really hosts too, you know, but they won't let me call them that. I think because they don't want to do any typing.
We don't want to be responsible.
Accomplice feels more appropriate.
Oh, accomplice and cohort
in
crime.
I like that.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we three have been called the busiest mouths on Vashon, and I guess we ought to own that now.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to remind listeners that we really want you to be part of our show. And we're begging you to send us emails at theklatch@voiceofvashon.org. And, you know, if you have suggestions or complaints or ideas or questions, email us. Let us know you're out there. And don't forget to download the Voice of Vashon app, which, you know, it works so much better than anything else. And you can listen anytime.
Comes in nice and crisp.
It does. Anyway, I hope you can pull up a chair and listen. We have some surprising contemporary topics today, some old stories, and some new information. So it's good to be back in the studio. I always like coming in here to see you guys. How are things in your world, Miss Susan?
Very full. Very full.
A lot going on, huh?
A lot going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how are you, Heidi?
I'm great. I am feeling like I'm getting sleep this week, which
so
is
glad.
A big thing to help reset the mood.
Yeah.
Work is busy. Swimming is awesome. Ooh. Beautiful. You guys, we did a round Vashon. It's called the Splash on Vashon. We did it on Saturday, and we invited a few of our swimming buddies to pilot what it would be like to concurrently swim sequences all around the island in a single day. And we did it. And it turned out really
good. Was it fun?
Good.
Oh, good.
So how many miles do you actually cover doing that, and how long did it take you?
We estimate that we did about 35 perimeter miles of the island.
Holy moly.
Collectively, yeah. I swam 6.
So it was a relay.
Sort of, but the problem is with the tides. They're, like, you couldn't possibly do it all in one day if you didn't have some people.
I'm sorry, my mic squeaked.
That was not gas. So it was super fun. So we had multiple sequences being swum at the same time, but it was just a delight. And the people
really
that came
fun.
From off island were delighted. So,
I bet.
We're going to do it next year big.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'll help.
Good.
I'll help, you know, PR and chatting about it.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
Well, so normally what we do, I guess, is now we'll talk about COVID a little bit. You know, I don't know if some newer listeners out there might not know that we started this show during COVID because we were hungry for coffee with our girlfriends to talk about what's going on and what's happening in the world. And so we're kind of trying to bring that into this show and into your home so that we can talk about current issues. And COVID, you know, affected all of us in many, many ways. And it's a part of our life. Today is August 24th, 2021.
Yes.
So if you're listening to this in 2022, don't be scared.
It will be an archive. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. But I do have kind of a humorous little thing I want to read before we get into the heavy topic of COVID.
All right.
And this came out of The Guardian. And it's a writer named Marina Hyde. And she was talking about how Boris Johnson was going to, he was saying something about COVID and thought something mask, something, something. And she just couldn't get past his hair.
Oh,
so she wrote this thing. It's just a paragraph. It says, Johnson's hair, always ridiculous, now seems to have reached animal rescue stage. The PM resembles one of those old English sheepdogs that charities put on sad music fundraising adverts with a voice saying, when Boris came to us, his coat was so matted, he was effectively blind. Or maybe he's the star of an 80-minute Netflix movie in which the sheepdog somehow becomes the president and we end up learning a lot. if not about politics or ourselves, then definitely about the Netflix commissioning process.
Perfect. It's so true.
So a little bit of a statistic here is that their total deaths worldwide is 4.3 million.
My goodness.
As of August 16th, Johns Hopkins University. Total confirmed cases, 207 million.
Wow.
So 7,500 new deaths on the 16th and 442,000 new cases.
So here on August 24th, 2021, COVID has reared its ugly head.
Once again,
we had an opportunity to go maskless for a heartbeat. And now we're back to wearing masks. You might notice that we're all talking through
Can
masks.
Can you tell?
Can you tell? Yeah. We're wearing masks. So.
But we've actually had a death here on Vashon Island.
Yes, we sure did. We sure did.
And here we thought we were in a bubble, but we're not.
No, we're not. You know, one of the other things that's happened that I noticed is that there are the world's billionaires have seen their wealth surge by over $5 trillion since the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, they're cashing in big time.
They're cashing in big time. And I read an article in, maybe it was Forbes. I think it was Forbes. And they named, I don't know, like 14 or 15 brand new billionaires. Most of them, there were like three or four from America. The founder of Moderna is a new.
Oh, really?
And Timothy Springer, who's a molecular pharmacologist and founding investor in Moderna. And the other people that made a lot of money were healthcare data analytics. People who can provide that.
And they're billionaires?
They're billionaires.
Well,
now.
The companies must be, or the founders.
Well, they're talking net worth here.
Yeah.
Of okay. $3.5 billion.
Boom.
So most of the new billionaires are in China. There are also some in Italy, Canada, Spain, and India. And it's all because of COVID.
Bam.
You know, I get Yes Magazine, and this latest issue is called What is Enough?
And, oh, billionaires.
And one of the articles is Helping the Rich Let Go.
Yeah.
A new generation of wealth advisors helps wealthy people give away their money instead of hoard it. And here's, over the next 20 years, a minimum of $35 trillion and up to $70 trillion in wealth will transfer from the post-World War II generation to the next younger generation. Most of that wealth will flow in the upper canopy of the wealth forest between family members in the world's wealthiest 0.1%.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's where we are.
And here's where they are.
The casket business is booming. It's not funny, you know, but there's a guy in Houston who is, I mean, he's a funeral director.
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, depression and suicide and illnesses and all those things that we normally deal with are sort of cast aside because of the COVID bodies. And he said they're literally stacking up and they can't find enough caskets.
Wow.
They're building, you know, the industry itself is changing and they're starting to build more cold storage for bodies.
Wow.
It's depressing and scary. And then, you know, this Mr. Goldstein says, where is it? That they have so many dead bodies. And he said, if I encounter anybody that does not believe in the severity of this pandemic, I can take you to a funeral home and show you how serious it is. It's no exaggeration that the bodies are, in a literal sense, stacking up. And here we are again.
Yep. Yeah. I think it's very real.
Yeah.
And I think it was totally preventable.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there's a lot of other belief systems around there. Any other COVID news?
There's just, you know, four main variants circulating around the United States and around the world right now. And I'll just do a quick rundown.
I thought there were three.
Oh, no.
I thought there were eight, but yeah.
I think there's many more.
But the
four that are really doing their thing are Alpha, which was first detected in the UK in September of 2020. So that wasn't that long ago. That was, you know, almost a year ago, I guess. 182 countries, Alpha's been found. Delta, which was first recognized in India. And that was October 2020. Again, not long ago.
Very long ago.
Is now in 135 countries around the world.
Oh, my Lord.
Beta, May of 2020, first found in South America. That is not Brazil. And 132 countries now. And Gamma, which was Brazil.
Oh, right.
Specific.
Right.
It's now in 80 countries, and that was found around Thanksgiving of 2020. So,
okay, so now there are recommendations that people who've had Pfizer and Moderna get booster shots. And I'm wondering if those booster shots or if those original vaccinations really are effective against these four or more variants.
So,
do we know anything about that?
Yeah, there so far you can get breakthrough. You can get breakthrough COVID having both vaccines.
Yeah.
It will keep you from massive illness and hospitalization.
Right. But I have heard that it's like the worst flu you ever had. You really believe you're going to die. It's really bad. It's not like a mild cold.
True.
Which some people are saying, oh, well, if I get it, it's not that bad. You know, it's like, wait a minute.
So the CDC might be recommending the booster shot, but the World Health Organization is saying to the U.S. and other wealthy countries, whoa, 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 not so fast. We still have a lot of people who need their basic vaccine.
Right.
So don't be giving yourself a booster privileged countries without these other countries getting theirs. So it's a really interesting, you know, you talk about people cashing in and prosperous versus the have-nots. And that's a really good example of that.
Well, and it makes you wonder about Pfizer and whether the whole booster thing is just a great new economic trick.
I think it's
money-making
probably,
trick.
Maybe. Okay, I can't say no.
Well, we don't know.
Right, we don't know.
But I'm doing it.
The other thing
is, if I can have it, I'm doing it.
So we should mention that Pfizer got its FDA approval. So
which is good.
The hope is that some of the skeptics who used that as an argument not to get vaccinated will now relent and stick their shoulders out and say, okay, hit it.
Jab me, baby.
Exactly. So that's the basics of what's happening in COVID land. And it was really sad to hear somebody from a fairly prominent family on this island.
Yep.
Boom. Yeah. And another person is, to my knowledge, still in the hospital. Yeah. And she's younger than me. Super healthy, no comorbidities. And was in ICU and now is out of ICU, but extremely weak to the point they're not letting her go out of the hospital.
Was she vaccinated?
I don't know, but I think she was not.
I think not, because they're talking like 99% of the patients are non-vaccinated.
Serious illness.
Right. And serious.
They end up there. Yeah. Sure. That makes sense. So get well and
and wear your masks.
Get vaccinated.
Yes, get better, everybody.
I know it's a personal choice. I just really wish that more people would get vaccinated so this thing wouldn't keep mutating and getting everybody sick and breakthroughs.
Right.
Yeah. Yikes.
Well, so
stepping off soapbox now.
Kaflunk.
Yeah. Good job. On to some little tidbits that I found. Okay, so there's a publishing company called Orion. They're small publishing. They do poems and anthologies and that kind of stuff. But they are doing a new book. It's not quite out yet, but they're calling it The Old Growth. And they're doing it as they consulted with some of their writers, and they looked in old poetry, and the assignment was to name your favorite tree from a book or a poem. And so I read some of these things. There's a lot of them, and I won't read them all, but Seamus Heaney, do you know Seamus Heaney? He's an Irish poet, probably my favorite poet in the whole world. He wrote that he translated a medieval Irish poem that tells the story of a king who was cursed by a saint, and as a result, he goes insane and wanders the Irish landscape. He wanders as kind of a bird, and he comes to know each tree in which he briefly alights, seeing its attributes as if it were a neighbor or a comrade. or at least another being with various traits and demeanors. And the alder, he says, the alder is a tree I see in the country and in the city. And when the wind is right, I always see it as pleased to see me, or at least not so displeased like a friend.
How cute.
I know. And then there's a famous poem, which I don't know, by Robert Frost called Maple. And in this poem, a mother names her newborn daughter Maple, and then she dies. And so Maple's father doesn't know what she wanted it to mean. So then they started talking about the trees, and he started understanding. And let's see. A maple tree doesn't appear for scrutiny until the very end of Frost's long narrative poem, when a maple in autumn stands, quote, alone with smooth arms lifted up and every leaf of foliage she'd worn laid scarlet and pale pink about her feet.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Oh, and see how the tree is a she?
Yeah,
I like the tree is a she. And she just tossed off her red and pink leafy negligee. Is it cringy? No, I don't think so. Maple covers her eyes with her hands. Isn't this what you wanted? The tree magnificently dares through only in my imagination where I ventriloquize.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Turning it into a bird.
Yeah. And then it says, interpretation can be a mirror, an echo, instant gratification for the reader who believes that a tree says, read me, which no maple has ever said to anybody.
I love that.
Well, we don't know that. Yeah.
I'm really excited about the book. I think, trees, we're in tree country. And I just, I think it's wonderful. It'd be a wonderful homage.
There's a Doug. There are two Doug firs in front of my house. They're very old, probably 70 years old. And there's some arms that kind of dip and swoop. And two of them touch.
Oh.
And when I'm in the hot tub, we have an outdoor wood-fired hot tub. And I look over at that and I go, that's you and me, David.
Yeah.
You know, and I love all that we're learning about how the trees communicate.
Yes.
The ground,
the mycorrhizae,
the roots, and how they take care of each other.
Yes. There was some talk of that in this article about how, it's starting to come out. People are starting to pay attention to nature and the way animals and plants and trees converse, really. I mean, the trees do when they communicate.
And how sensate and how conscious they truly are. But I want to back up to Seamus Heaney's poem.
Yeah.
He said this guy was
cursed by a saint. That's not a very saintly thing to do.
Well, yeah, but they do that all the time.
Saints curse people?
Sure.
I didn't know that either.
I don't know. I'm just babbling. I really don't know.
You say it with total conviction. See that? Oh, my God.
Not important to know what you're talking about.
She got just a bridge to sell me.
It just sound like it. Well, they must, though, because if people are really bad, the saint says you can't come here. I don't know. We need some other people to talk about.
A curse is a whole different thing from not inviting you to your house.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's a medieval Irish poem. So there you have it.
That's true. Consider the date.
And consider the Irish.
And consider medieval fairy tales for kids, which were horrifying.
Exactly.
Never sleep.
Hey, have you guys ever... have you ever been to the Boundary Waters? I'm switching subjects here.
Yes, I have.
Up by Minnesota and Canada?
Yes, I have.
Oh, my God. It's so beautiful up there. I went canoeing up there a few years ago and hired a guide who was a retired geology teacher, professor. So he took us in this, my girlfriend and I, and we were, in wilderness for days and didn't see another human being.
Wow.
We didn't see another human being canoeing through there in days. For days. It was fabulous. But I want to tell you this story. When I went there, I was really excited to go do the paddling and I was going to learn how to do portage and all that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. So we went, but we have to go to Ely, Minnesota, which is way up north. And we went there and a float plane came to get us because there are no roads into this place we were going.
Wow.
So we got on the float plane and I was so excited. It was so still there. It was 5 o'clock in the morning. It was so still that there was a dragonfly in front of me just above the water. And I could hear his wingtip just hit the water. It was magical. So that, that began the tour of getting on the airplane. the float plane with the man from Minnesota in his,
you know, is he wearing a flannel shirt?
Yeah, of course. And a big red beard, and you know, and
oh
then,
boy,
and then the geology guide was there, and then my friend and I were in the back seat. It only held four people. Well, we weren't supposed to take off. I didn't know that, but there was a storm brewing, and he had been told not to take off. So the wind was coming, and it was horrible, horrible. And the plane, the law is, for environmental reasons, if the clouds are at a certain level, you have to fly under them. And when you fly under them, it disturbs the wildlife and the greenery, everything, because you...
Oh, of course. Sure.
So they have to fly under the clouds, and they have to follow logging trails. So you're going around, curvies around and up and down and around, and pretty soon I said, where's my purse?
Where's your purse?
My purse, because I had to throw up.
Oh.
It was the worst flight of my entire life. And I thought, I'm never going to make it. And so we landed on this little island where we were supposed to have lunch, and there was no way I was going to eat. I was so sick. And I said to my friend, I'm not getting back on that plane. And the guide said, well, there's no way to get there except on the plane. And I said, fine, I'm not getting back on that plane.
Oh, my God.
And so he looked at my friend and he said, Verna, can you tell her? I mean, can you, you know, she said, no. She won't, I can't, it's not going to happen. Well, they said, you know, the only other thing we could do is get the boat, and it'll take about 6 hours, and you're about 40 minutes in the airplane. I said, fine. So,
oh my God, they must have wanted to throw you.
I'm sure they did.
To leave you right where you were.
Actually, what ended up happening was they sent these two guys with their boat, who were fabulous, and they said, we've been trying to tell people they should do it this way anyway.
Okay.
And they had little snacks and little, you know, stuff for us to do in the boat while we were going.
But oh, so they didn't ditch you. You got
the
company. Okay.
No, they didn't ditch me. They felt really bad.
Okay.
They never knew anybody that got that sick.
Wow.
You know, so anyway, that was the prelude to this glorious trip. And while I was on that trip, I found out about this lady who we missed because we were going the wrong way. But she is a root beer brewer, or she was. And she used to, up in Quetico National Park, it's Quetico.
Mm.
And she fell in love with it in the 30s and just moved there by herself. She was originally from Chicago. She was a nurse, but she fell in love with the woods and moved there. So people, you know, she lived by herself, and people were just kind of amused and amazed that she could live by herself and do this. And she liked the canoe paddlers that came by in front of her house, and she decided to make root beer for them. So her whole life, she made root beer for people. And she said her life was hardly lonely. She had all kinds of people coming to visit and tell her stories and ask her questions. And she said she was a curiosity at that time, you know, because she had the portage and she had heavy loads, and it was a lot. And she hand painted her own signs about the root beer so the canoers could see where they were going.
Tantalizing them.
Yes. Anyway, this was a very interesting personality piece that I read about her. Her name is Dorothy Moulter, M-O-L-T-E-R. And she lived on the Isle of Pines in Knife Lake, about 50 miles out of Ely.
Is she still alive?
No, she died in the 90s, I think.
What kind of roots did she make the root beer from?
She got her supplies from the A&W. In either Duluth or Ely.
That works.
And she got a whole bottling thing going up. They had caps on it. She made labels, and she just gave it away. She just gave it to people.
So she must have gotten sassafras root or something?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
The original.
Yeah,
that's cool.
With the original. So anyway, that has nothing to do with anything except that I think she's a really interesting, or was a very interesting woman who didn't understand people who said solitary is awful. You can't live here by yourself. And she did. You know, winters were probably hard.
Oh, I can't even.
Yeah. But, you know, she's all stocked up, and that's what she does.
I love that story.
That is a great story.
Yeah, thank you.
I would like to take a moment to give our underwriters a quick shout out. So we're going to do that.
Okay.
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVashon.com.
This portion of VOV programming is brought to you by Vashon Community Care, Vashon's only assisted living and memory care community, providing compassionate care to seniors for over 20 years. You can schedule a tour at VashonCommunityCare.org.
And we're back.
You're listening to Voice of Vashon. I guess you know that. Here we are.
101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington.
There it is.
There it is. We just finished talking about women, or a woman who lived alone, and it prompted me to think about a personal experience that I had. My younger brother died a couple weeks ago, and so I've been going through this kind of, you know, mourning and grief, and I'm not going to cry today, but I have been a lot. And his wife, I've talked to her almost every day. Well, not every day, but I talk to her quite frequently. And, you know, it's really, really hard to lose a younger brother. It's like not supposed to happen.
Right.
And then his wife sits there. They're ranchers in Montana. And okay. They have a beautiful, beautiful place and a gorgeous home. And, you know, so there's all of that to think about. What is she going to do now? She doesn't know.
Man.
But what occurred to me when I was talking with her was, after all the hoopla is over, the funeral's over,
right.
You know, the grave's been marked, everything's happening and everyone went home, there she sits by herself.
Right.
And I remember when my dad died, I remember that happening to my mom, and she was excluded from, you know, couples. They used to have a bunch of couples they ran around with and did stuff, and then, then she didn't get invited anymore.
Like a divorce.
It's like, well, it's worse than a divorce because you're so alone. You know, divorce you can understand. People have to choose sides usually. But in death, you don't, you know.
Yeah. No sides, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, my reason for telling you guys this is that be kind to widows.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fifth wheel is a real thing. People don't invite widows to dinner parties because, you know, five chairs, seven chairs. It's a really odd thing. But talking about women alone and women doing different things, I just wanted to say for all you people out there in radio land,
yeah.
If you know a widow, go check on her. Yeah. Take her to lunch.
Or invite her to a dinner party.
Yeah. Invite her over.
You know, those odd numbers really make conversation interesting.
I think they do. You know, and I think odd numbers are good. I like odd numbers. But, you know, if you're traditional, having a dinner party, you have six or eight you know.
And seating boy, girl.
Sorry. Frankly, that's pretty boring in my view.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, please don't tell me about that. Yeah.
You know, I found this article about the feminist magic of the older witch, and I'm trying to cut out the witches in fairy stories are invariably older women. The crone, withered and malevolent, is what we grew up thinking when we think witch. What's so scary about an old woman?
I know. That we have to call her a witch?
Yeah. Why has she held on so tenaciously to her role as children frightener that we still recognize that terror long into adulthood? Maybe the same thing that made her friend, whom she's talking about in this article, perfect for the witch role in her make-believe games, is the same thing that made her so important in her life. Mm-hmm. Her untethered wisdom that Joan was unattached to a man always felt daring.
Yeah, that's...
Somehow she has an aura of asexual freedom from the boring trappings of compulsory heterosexual courtship. So I think that's a really interesting person.
Oh,
I'd love to have her for dinner.
I'd like to investigate that more. That's really good. Thank you. Yeah, I like that.
There's a comic called Katie Green Bean, I believe. And it's the same thing. It's an asexual, sort of like Holly Hobby and all these tones of green.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a big thing. Go check it out. Katie Green Bean.
Green Bean?
Yeah.
As in green bean.
Is my mask muffling my speech?
I don't know. I can't see your mouth.
It's true.
You know, the other one that I love is the woman, and I'm not going to remember, in the greeting cards, who is the grumpy.
Oh. Not Kathy. Is it Kathy?
No, it's the other woman.
The older lady, like Phyllis Diller. If Phyllis Diller was a cartoon.
I love her.
She's the best.
She's hilarious.
And she's so cranky.
She says it, cranky, and she says it straight.
Yep.
She's a good one.
She calls it, yeah.
It is.
Oh, we need her name.
Yeah.
Karen Finley would know.
Karen Finley would know. Karen, get on it.
She would know.
So speaking of women and telling the truth and talking about who we are and what we do, I have a friend in California whose name is Erica Schickel.
Okay.
She is the daughter of, do you know Richard Schickel? It's hard for me to say it.
New York Times columnist.
Yeah. Yes. And he was a movie reviewer, theater critic, I think. Film critic.
Yes.
And historian. Yeah. And her mom is the novelist Julia Whedon. So Josh Whedon is her first cousin.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, she has written a book called The Big Hurt. And in 1982, she was expelled from her East Coast prep school for sleeping with a teacher. She was that girl.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah. Rebellious, precocious, looking for love, seduced, caught, and then whisked away in the night to avoid scandal. So, you know, she talks about that she came of age in the 70s and that it was a really hard time in the 70s in Manhattan for a daughter of two literary famous people. And so it's a coming of age story. It's kind of one of a lost girl in a predatory world.
Yes.
And the other story of that girl grown up who, in reckoning with her past, ends up recreating it with a notorious LA crime novelist, blowing up her marriage and casting herself into the second exile of her life.
Scarlet Letter.
I know. And she's telling the truth. And it looks at this book looks at the legacy of shame handed down through maternal bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the cost of trauma, of real trauma, what it costs us as an adult, the things that we experience as young women. And she said, you know, 1970s Manhattan made girls grow up too fast. And she takes a long look at the shadow cast by great, monstrously self-absorbed literary lives and the ways in which women pin themselves like beautiful butterflies to the spreading board of male ego.
Nicely put.
Isn't it? I like that. Yeah. That's pretty poetic.
She's in Vanity Fair this month, my friend Erica. There's a color photograph of her kind of reclining in a pool, sort of, but she's fully clothed and she's sitting in a pool. Very sassy. She's very sassy.
That's kind of a big deal.
It's a really big deal. And she said she'd be happy to phone in and talk with us someday. So I'd love to do that with her.
That's great.
That would be great.
The name of the book again is The Big Hurt.
Big Hurt.
Okay.
And Erica tells the truth. So you have an interesting woman you want to talk about, Heidi. And I would like you to start that now.
Yeah, I like that women are coming out and telling the truth about what it's like to be a woman in this culture, in many cultures.
I had just stepped away because there are children underneath the speaker outside.
Oh.
And so nobody outside can hear this. It's just us and our people that are tuned in on, you got it?
Yeah.
Because what we're about to share is explicit. And even though it's not vulgar.
It's not vulgar.
There's no profanity.
It's really juicy.
But it's juicy
interesting.
That I don't want the children to ask their father out there what certain things
mean. What are we talking about? Yeah, and in fact, those of you who are listening should make sure there are no children in the room with you now.
Yeah, unless you're ready to have some pretty...
The talk.
So who is this woman?
Okay, my high school classmate of Ignacio Valley High School in the Bay Area, Concord, California... around 19, she's a graduate of 1986 graduate of Ignacio Valley. Her name is Cami Talui. She became a San Francisco Chronicle journalist, photojournalist, photographer extraordinaire. And she needed to get scrappy to make money to put herself through college. So she ended up at Lusty Lady, which is a strip club and has like private pleasures booth and all kinds of stuff. And she ended up working, you have to work all the rooms when you're a stripper there. And she was given an assignment by her photographer to chronicle her job for a week, and she kind of panicked. Wow. But she did the assignment, and I'm going to let her tell the rest of the story. So we have an audio clip, and I sat down and asked Cammie a couple questions to audio record, rather. And the first question was, how did this happen? She published a book years later. We're talking 30 years later, called $5 for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is.
And is it new?
It's a new book.
It's just out.
Void Publishing took it on.
Say the name again.
VOID, like voiding your bladder.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Couldn't help it. It's
Heidi.
void.photo/5$ mm-hmm. if you want to look at the book itself. But well, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's.
And yeah, let Cammie do the intro here.
Hi, this is Cammie Tallulah. I just published a book called $5 for 3 minutes, which are the photographs that I shot when I was working as a stripper at the Lusty Lady Theater in San Francisco. I was a stripper, I guess mostly because I was going through university. I was going to San Francisco State University, and I was studying photojournalism. And at the time, it was all film and you know, darkroom and paper and stuff. And it was really expensive to have to shoot all the time. And, you know, jobs at that point were just minimum wage. And so a lot of my friends were strippers, so I thought, well, give it a go, see how it is. And so I started working there, and so, like, fast forward a year, I was still working there, still getting my degree, and my professor gave us an assignment to photograph our lives for a week, like everything we did for a week. And so for me, that was kind of like,
everything.
How am I going to do this? I going to photograph my job? And so I thought, well, I probably can't take pictures of the customers because that'd be impossible. So I just asked a friend to come and, you know, visit me in the private pleasures booth, which is a one-on-one booth where you see each other through glass, you know, and then you're private, but there's no touching and stuff. But anyway, he didn't show up. And so I knew I had to take a picture for the
scoundrel
assignment. And I just got up the nerve and, you know, studying photojournalism. So that's sort of part of the job, is you have to ask difficult questions and you have to take pictures in difficult situations. So I just got brave and I asked one of my customers if I could take his picture, and I offered him a free dildo show in exchange for letting me take his picture. And that was a $10 value.
That's a $1,000 value.
I thought was a pretty good deal. And apparently so did he.
Something has happened. One moment, please.
Oops.
And so he said yes. And then the next customer said yes. And then a couple customers later also said yes. And so I just, I kept going. And I photographed for the next, I was there for another 2 years.
2 years. So I just hit pause.
Wow.
2 years.
And this became quite the project, I think.
I guess.
Well beyond the assignment.
Oh my goodness.
Did she have her photography teacher's support in this, or did she just take off and do it on her own?
She did it on her own. And the next couple questions that I ask her are, what proportion of men that she asked actually said, yes, you may take my photo, and or women, clients.
Mm-hmm.
And then the continuing question was, as you got repeat people coming in, did they lose their inhibitions more and more, or what was the situation like?
Interesting.
Did things sort of transform? Here's what she said.
I think that probably I shot, well, in the course of the 2 years of shooting my customers, and I only worked 3 shifts a week, and I wasn't always in the private pleasures booth because there was also the dancing and the peep show. So any opportunity I did ask my
dancing
customers
and the peep show
if I could take their picture, but I'd say probably more than half said no.
Which I believe.
So I ended up with probably 100 or maybe a little more images that I shot. over the course of a couple of years. And out of those, I think I usually only really show people about 50 of them because they're not all great. And sometimes I shot multiple images and so on. So I think that, like, some men would say yes, and then they'd cover their faces. So I think even though they didn't want to be seen, really, they just wanted the free dildo show. So in a way, the images that you're seeing are of the guys who didn't really have much money to spend.
The cheap ones.
Those, exactly. Like,
coupon cutters and, you know, save money. But then there were the guys who really liked being photographed. They liked the attention, and they liked the fact that this young woman was paying them attention. So it was kind of a thing for them. So they'd come back and want pictures taken again. So that was
interesting.
That wasn't very usual, but there were definitely a couple of guys who liked it.
Yeah.
But I'd say quite a few of them would cover their faces just to get the deal.
The deal.
The deal done.
And I think that, there was kind of a range of whether or not they were really inhibited. Like, if they were, they'd come in the booth and they'd be shy and they'd just want to watch me and then run out. And then some guys would come in and they'd be shy, but then they'd sort of wank off and then they'd leave. And then there's other guys
and
who
they
would,
did.
Like, put on a show for
that's
me.
That's what they're there for.
And were really into it and would, like, strip down and... Or they'd bring toys, or they'd have some shtick, you know, or they'd, like, have this huge fetish that they'd wanted to act out with me. And so it was such a range between the shy people who were just testing it out and the guys who, like, made it a habit to come in and express their wildest desires with me.
The next segment of this, she's talking about how long it took to get this published, and also all the places that these photos have been in the world. So I'm going to let her close.
Okay.
Cammie, you're awesome, by the way.
Thank you, Cammie.
Here we go.
And it took a long time to get this book published. It's been almost 30 years. And it's had, you know, some of the work has been in shows, big shows, like at the Museum of Modern Art in San Francisco, at the Tate Modern in London, and Camera Work Gallery in San Francisco. So it has had a life. But for the most part, people have been afraid of the work and only showing kind of the more tame images where there aren't any penises, because I think the penises are where a lot of people draw the line, because they're afraid. And they're afraid of being censored. They're afraid of people. I don't know. I don't know why it's so scary. But I think that things are opening up now and people are more open to the work. They're more open to considering male sexuality, as opposed to just, you know, looking at naked women, which is what we're all used to, and sexualized women. But to look at work where the men are sexual and the men are naked and the men, you know, that whole part of the equation of sex work, where you have, it's an exchange of money and it's a business. But you only ever see the one side of that business.
She's
which is
totally right.
Naked women. Yeah. And so this work really turns it around, where you see the other part of the equation. Where I'm looking back at the guy who's looking at me. And that's what's so exciting about the work. And I think is very rare to see this kind of photography. I don't know why, you know, I don't know why so few people have done it, but I hope that it inspires more photographers, more sex workers to turn the camera and try and show their experience.
The book is called $5 for 3 minutes.
It's probably not a coffee table book.
I mean, it could be, but my goodness.
Whose coffee table? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to listen to her turn it around and how we have been afraid to expose the penis. It's about a vulnerability. Men, that it's okay for women to be vulnerable sexually, but men have traditionally not been. They've been dominant and not vulnerable in those places where they're showing their weakness or their desire.
Yes.
Or their needs, their basic needs.
Their needs, yeah. I appreciated how she described some people would just show up at the private pleasures booth and just fling off their clothes and put on a show for her.
Yeah.
That must have been so refreshing for Cammy, but also for the men.
Sure.
For the men, like, okay, I get to be in this little cloistered place and just throw down.
And I'm safe.
Yeah.
And I'm safe. And
until she published his photograph.
No.
Well, but he knew.
Yeah. She got permission from him.
So they each knew that it was going to be published.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah. So I just think it's phenomenal. And it's a wonderful turning of the tables in general. So
Well, to say nothing of the art. I haven't seen the book, but I've seen some of the photographs and they're just really sharp and well done, and every single photo has a story. I mean, the ones that I've seen,
definitely.
And I would like to see the book. And I don't think it's vulgar.
No,
I mean, I don't think it's like X-rated, gross me out kind of pornography. I don't think it's that.
No,
but it is provocative.
Oh,
for sure.
Definitely.
You know,
and a little bit like, oh, I'm behind the curtain, you know?
Yeah. Incognito.
Completely, though. You're on the other side of the plexiglass.
Like, have you ever been to a strip club?
Yes.
I have, too. Have you, Susan?
I've been to, what they used to call male strip shows. I've been to those. But generally, the men tend to be sort of in charge. And the women respond to them, but they don't necessarily, it's not a vulnerability
right.
in those male strip shows. Yeah.
They
play
macho man.
Oh, characters of authority.
I was about to say domineering characters of authority.
Police.
Well, I don't know, I've always did go to a male one. I thought it was really boring.
I found it rather boring.
It was really boring. And I've been to in Colorado a couple strip clubs and I really was, I was interested in what was going on off the stage, you know, because the woman is up there doing her thing and there's so much other activity in that bar.
Oh yeah.
A lot of stuff going on and men are, I don't know. It's just kind of, it's like idol worship kind of, you know,
a really good way to put it. Well, if you want to see Cammie's photos, it's CAMMIET.com. You can find more information about the book from there, CAMMIET.com. She's got all kinds of great photos, like our high school days, even back in Ignacio Valley, and all kinds of really cool things. We are going to take a quick second and once again, give praise to our underwriters.
Thank you.
Snapdragon Bakery and Cafe is one of the underwriters of Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9. We offer pastries, vegetarian cuisine, and when it's not a pandemic, we have lots and lots of music and art and all sorts of beautiful things. Until that time is over, please come and visit us and have one of our world-famous cinnamon rolls. Find us online at vashonsnapdragon.com.
VOV programming support is provided by the Vashon Loop, Islanders' alternative newspaper offering free news, information, arts, and entertainment from the people since 2001. It's your chance to get into the loop at vashonloop.com.
I remember Linda's flashing me dick pics.
Oh, I am not.
Yes, you better explain what I'm looking at.
Okay, I'll fess up. Jeez, Heidi.
See? Told you. She was.
Don't you wish you were here, folks?
I have a family member who works in the hospital, nursing, industry. Surgery, hospital industry thingy. And she sent a photograph this morning of the fake penis that the new surgeons use to practice on when they're doing surgery. And so it's this rubber replica of a man from his belly button to the top of his thigh. And there it is. I mean, if this were television, you could see it, but there it is. And that's what they practice on.
They have this.
And they have a woman one too.
So, okay, they're practicing surgery. So how many of these do they go through? I mean, are they
there's probably a big industry. Maybe we should invest.
Really?
I have a song that's totally perfect for this, and I want to play it for just a quick second.
What is it?
Missile. King Missile. That's
wink, wink.
Just for a second. It's called Detachable Penis. Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's from around 1992, 93. And it's pretty funny. He woke up one morning with a bad hangover and his penis was missing.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry about the lead. Take a while.
Well, that'd ruin your whole day.
This morning with a bad hangover and my penis was missing again. This happens all the time. It's detachable. This comes in handy a lot of the time. I can leave it home when I think it's going to get me in trouble.
Detachable penis. You cannot unhear this. All right. I'm just going to end it right there, but you get it. It's a real song, and it's kind of an earworm. Not the penis,
well,
but the song.
Not the song. Yeah.
So does that mean it has a life of its own?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And the song, it ends up being found on one of those sidewalk spreads where homeless people sell a little this and that. So it ends well. He gets it back and reattaches
it. Robin Williams used to do a great bit about being a 15-year-old boy when his penis was out of control.
Oh, yes. I heard that. Hilarious.
He's going to pick up a girl for a date. And he's nervous and he doesn't want to push the doorbell and the penis says, never mind, I'll do it.
I love it. I got to watch that again. I remember that.
It's hilarious. Funny. It's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. So we need that.
How do you have you kept in touch with Cammy all these years?
Yeah. Pretty much? After high school, it was funny because we were all just sort of figuring out who we are. I moved away and we lost touch. But then, so that was 1985. Fast forward, I moved back to the Bay Area in 1991 and I run into her on the Muni bus.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no kidding.
And I was like, oh my God, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I'm in school. And she had light dreadlocked hair and didn't look at all like she used to have really long hippie mermaid, Willa Balsam head. You know, she was totally that brunette. And so to see her sort of looking more punk rock and I was like, whoa, okay, cool. And then I had super short black hair and I worked at Macy's and was going back to school and interning at PolyGram Records. So we just had totally incongruent lives. But it was just like, oh my God, you know, okay, put a pin in it. We've seen each other again and oh, great to see you. Good luck. And then she became this super prominent photographer for the Chronicle and award-winning. I mean, she's
That's what I was going to ask you is what does she do for a living now?
She does photography, a combination of things. She's, she lives with her husband out in England. So she also volunteers and does the sexiest kitten photos for the animal shelter, or she used to do. And like, you know, those adoptions were happening really fast because of her.
Oh, that looks pretty nice.
Yeah. So she's doing awesome.
So Cammy IT is her Facebook is her website, rather?
CAMMIET. So it looks like CAMMIET.com. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Definitely check it out. Yeah. So we lost touch and then Facebook happened and we're back in touch again. And ever since then, we've been in touch a lot. And actually gave her a job when she was living down in Oregon for a client in my PR practice.
Oh.
So
we
have crossed paths a few times. For sure.
What an impressive woman.
Oh, completely.
That is great.
Much respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's about 10,000 questions I have to ask her about that 30-year-ago adventure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Other women and what were the women like that she worked with?
Yeah. On the void.photo website, she talks, there's just a quick paragraph about how she loved these women that she worked with because they were open, uninhibited, smart, feminist, you know, just go for it type of women. And she really loved that culture. Mm-hmm. She just had so much fun.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because the strip club, I don't think the men see the women as feminists and outspoken and with brains, you know, it's a body. It's
they
TNA,
see them as objects.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, objectified. Yeah. But the fact that the women knowing that are smart enough to make some money. I mean, that's basically what, you know, sex workers, it's a tough subject.
Mm-hmm. It is a tough subject, but you know, I think strippers and certain other women manage to manipulate men's attitudes and men's desires. And they are, despite what the men might think, they are in charge of that situation.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's impressive.
I agree.
And I grew up naive about men and how easily they can be manipulated through their penises. But later in life, of course, I raised two sons and I watched them be manipulated. Mm-hmm. But I watched my friends who managed to get things in life that I never thought about getting because they knew how to make it work with a man.
Right.
I never knew. Right.
It's interesting because I have a chip on my shoulder about earning my keep. Mm-hmm. And I just always have. And
yeah, me too.
I used to have a great disdain for women who would do that.
Exactly.
They would pull those strings and get theirs. And I just think, oh, you're no better than the oldest profession. And I know that sounds like a really horrible thing to say, but then it's kind of like,
yeah, but it's
don't knock it. I don't know.
Really, yeah, but in a way it's worse, really, because the oldest profession, everyone, it's all above board.
That's a good point.
You know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Right? When it's a woman, you know, signing on the dotted line so she can have all the stuff because the guy's rich or whatever, well-known, whatever your thing is.
Yeah. Doing better than her.
Doing better than she is, yeah. So I think it's kind of a double-edged
meaning.
You know, though, it's kind of ancient and biological in that, or at least cultural, in that in Western culture and possibly others, women gained their power through men. And if they did it as prostitutes, or they did it as wives, or they did it as geishas, they couldn't get their own power. So their power, our female, feminine power, was about attaching to a man.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you're totally right.
Yeah.
So now we live in an age where women are gaining their own power, like Cammie, like you, Heidi.
Oh, thanks.
Like all three of us who have been independent women who... All right, not that powerful, but we've managed to,
I don't feel very powerful
to pay the bills. Yeah,
we're holding it down.
Yeah.
We're doing all right. We got no complaints.
I think the older I get, I mean, really, I have to say, the older I get, the less this kind of stuff affects me in any way, really.
Yeah.
I find it interesting. I love to watch things unfold like that. But my opinions, or I feel this way about that.
Right.
She shouldn't, or he should. I don't even have it anymore.
It's beautiful.
It's just like, okay, let's see what that is. Open up the box.
Yeah.
You know, you can always close it again if you can't handle it. But I find it liberating. I wonder how the industry is now, you know, because she's talking 30 years ago.
Right, right.
And I wonder how, you know, women are.
Yeah.
If it has evolved or.
I have one answer to that, and that's OnlyFans, which is the computer version of having your quote unquote private pleasures booth. You're paying a fee. You get to interact one-on-one with this.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
And that's what shut down the Lusty Lady in Seattle, is basically online porn.
There you go. Yeah, that's
right.
And
you can have a Zoom meeting if you want to.
I do. You could, Or mistake one for the other, which has obviously happened in the media.
Well, I think that can happen. You know, one funny thing I saw on Zoom.
Wink, wink, wink.
Except one funny thing I saw on Zoom was this woman sitting. She's working. You can tell she's working really hard. And the camera's on her, and behind her is her living room, and she's sitting at her desk or whatever, and she's working, you can tell, and she's talking, and she's, and behind her comes her husband eating an ice cream bar in his underwear.
There you go.
He just stood there for a minute, and she didn't know he was there.
Oh my God, how does she not know?
Somebody told her. I mean, she didn't realize it was there till somebody on Zoom said, you might want to look behind you.
That's well done. That's so funny.
And he didn't know, he didn't realize, you know, that she was on Zoom.
Really? The joy of Zoom.
So busted.
That's so funny. Yeah,
I've heard of people who thought they were off camera and started picking their nose.
Oh dear, oh God.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Speaking of picking your nose.
Really?
So, yeah, I have a
segue.
I have a funny story about that. I used to know a guy who made his living. He was like a, I don't know, oil guy. And he was out on the road a lot watching, you know, the big heavy equipment and all the stuff in the construction areas. Mm. And he got to see all the people drive by. And he said, people are doing one of two things in their cars. He said, they're either singing at the top of their lungs or they're picking their noses. And with that, we're almost out of time.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is KVSH.
Oh, thank you so much. Really good to
This has been the Clatch, and we're so happy you were with us.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you on the 2nd
September.
Tuesday of September.